Welcome to We The Podcast, the show about how the people outside of the billionaire and millionaire class, you know, most of us, engage the economy. That's it. 31 out of a billion. No, I'm not talking about your chances of winning the lottery or being hit by lightning twice. I'm talking about voter fraud. Specifically, I'm talking about imposter voting. You know, the fact is, despite what President Trump would have you believe, voter fraud is beyond rare. How rare? Incredibly rare. I'm talking like a pig who could fly kind of rare. It's beyond rare. In fact, it never happens as a practical matter. A lot of organizations and think tanks and media outlets have looked at this question of voter fraud, and they've reached the same conclusion. It almost never, ever happens. The Washington Post recently discovered that out of more than 1 billion votes cast since 2000, there have been only 31 instances of voter fraud. That's not what President Trump wants you to believe. He's stated multiple times that the only reason he lost the popular vote by 3 million votes was because of widespread voter fraud. And it's just not true. It never happened. But this has not stopped him from moving forward with this fallacy that there's some sort of massive widespread voter fraud. In fact, Trump didn't start this trend. Peddling falsehoods about voter fraud has been part of the Republican playbook for quite a long while. And it's all about trying to stop some people from voting. How do they do that? By pushing voter ID. Hard. 33 states have voter ID laws, which reduces turnout for people of color, older Americans, younger Americans, veterans, all kinds of folks. Some states, like my own home state of Minnesota, have defeated voter ID at the ballot box, while other states have had their voter ID laws overturned by the courts as being racially targeted and restrictive. While we're always going to be looking for ways to fight back on voter ID, Trump and the Republicans are looking for new ways to restrict people access to the ballot box. That's where Trump's new, quote, Election Integrity Commission, unquote, comes in. This is nothing other than a voter fraud commission. It's a fraudulent voter fraud commission. It's filled with some of the nation's worst vote suppressors and will undoubtedly be used to stop people from trying to vote. You know, I talked to Ari Berman, who's a political correspondent for The Nation magazine, and he wrote an incredible book, which I totally recommend, called Give Us the Ballot. And I talked with him about this commission and what it might mean for the American people.
I guess I'd like to jump in and just ask you, what's up with this Election Integrity Commission?
Well, the entire commission, as you know, is predicated on this gigantic lie that President Trump told after the election, which was that millions of people voted illegally. If he hadn't lost the popular vote and if he hadn't told this ridiculous lie to explain why he lost the popular vote, there never would have been this commission on election integrity. And so the entire thing is preposterous. And then he went out and chose some of the worst voter suppression advocates in the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Like Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, and others, to be on this committee and to run this committee. And that's really when all the alarm signs went up.
Well, you know, let's just talk about this. How much imposter voting really happens in America?
Very, very little. Voter fraud is a very small problem in American elections. We have penalties in place to prevent it. We have policies in place to detect it. Study after study after study has shown this is a very small problem. Just to give you a few different studies, one study has found that since the 2000 election, there have been over a billion votes cast, but only 31 cases of voter impersonation, which is the kind of fraud that they say occurs most often. The Brennan Michigan Center for Justice recently looked at non-citizen voting, which Donald Trump claims is rampant. They surveyed election administrators all across the country, and they found at most 30 cases of illegal voting. So not 3,000, not 300,000, certainly not 3 million, at most 30 cases. So
like two digits, like a two-digit number?
Like a two-digit number. So I'm not saying it never occurs, but it's been dramatically, dramatically exaggerated by Republicans.
Now let's compare that to the prescription which Trump and people like him believe, you know, might address this problem. Like photo ID, cross-check, voter purges. How many people does that disenfranchise?
So the fact is that voter suppression impacts many, many, many more people than voter fraud. You have a situation, take Wisconsin, for example. Donald Trump only won Wisconsin by 22,000 votes. Well, 300,000 voters there didn't have strict forms of government-issued ID that were required to cast a ballot. You look at Kansas, where Chris Kobach is from. He put in place a policy that required proof of citizenship for voter registration. So if you want to register to vote, you have to show your birth certificate, your passport, or naturalization papers. As you know from doing organizing, most people don't walk around with those documents.
So I've never seen it.
Yeah. So what happened in Kansas was that 1 in 7 new registrants were blocked from registering to vote, which was larger than 30,000 people. So can you imagine that? Let's say you have 7 people in line to buy groceries, and 1 of 7 of them are told, no, you can't buy groceries today. That's what voter registration was like in Kansas under Chris Kobach. Thousands of people have been incorrectly flagged as double voters under his cross-check system. So we're talking about tens of thousands of people that are potentially disenfranchised compared to a very, very small number, single to double digit number of voter fraud.
So, Ari, I think a lot of people kind of know what photo ID is. It's just this requirement that you have to have a government issued ID or more in order to cast a vote, even though the Constitution doesn't say anything about that. But what is this cross-check term you use?
So cross-check is a system that searches for double voting that 32 states are part of and that is run by Kansas. And the problem with the program is it uses very, very basic data. It only uses first names, last names, and date of birth to search for double voting. So what happens is a John Smith in Iowa could easily be confused with a John Smith in Kansas if they have the same name and the same birth date, which happens a lot more than you'd think. So what happens is Kobach runs all of this state voter data. He gets these unbelievable headlines that say tens of thousands of people are voting double, are registered in two states. Then you drill down on the data using more sophisticated information like Social Security numbers, other things, and you realize the number of double voting cases are extremely small. So in my recent New York Times Magazine article about Chris Kobach, I looked at North Carolina, where they originally joined CrossCheck, and they said 35,000 people may have voted illegally in the election. Then they did a more sophisticated analysis, and they found only 8 people who were referred to prosecution, and there were only 2 convictions. So they started with 35,000 cases of voter fraud, and it drilled down to only 2. And the fear here is that, number one, there's going to be all of these false matches and these outrageous headlines about double voting. But then the second thing that's going to happen is people are going to be wrongly purged from the rolls, potentially even wrongly prosecuted, which has happened in Kansas, based on something that never happened.
So there might be more than one Ari Berman or more than one Keith Ellison out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably more than one Keith Ellison is more likely than more than one Ari Berman, given...
I guarantee you, there's more than one Ari Berman out there.
I know of a Rabbi Ari Berman that is now president of University. People keep sending me messages that said, congratulations on becoming a rabbi. Does this mean you're not a journalist?
Got a new line of work. But there used to be a linebacker for the Buffalo Bills named Keith Ellison. There's a district court judge, Keith P. Ellison, down in Texas. Those are the only ones I know about, but I'm sure there's probably many more.
So this is just you know, so sloppy in terms of people being confused. And, you know, Kobach has done this a lot of times. So the other thing that Chris Kobach talks about is dead people voting. Mm-hmm. And he held a press conference in Kansas when he was running for Secretary of State in 2010, and he said 2,000 dead people are registered to vote in Kansas. And he pointed to one guy, he said, Alfred K. Brewer. Alfred K. Brewer is a deceased person who voted in the 2010 election. And this is very concerning. Well, the Wichita Eagle tracked down Alfred K. Brewer, and they found that he was alive, raking leaves in his front yard.
And so wait a minute now. It could be some sort of weird zombie thing.
So what happened was, it wasn't a zombie thing. What happened was his father was also named Alfred K. Brewer.
Well, that's a relief.
And Kobach hadn't bothered to call the son, Alfred K. Brewer, to confirm that he was alive and that his father was dead.
So we didn't have a Walking Dead problem.
We didn't have a Walking Dead. We didn't have any zombie voters.
Good
we had
know.
A case of someone being confused with their father. And this is usually what the kind of fraud allegations are. Mm. They're usually mistakes. Sometimes they're honest mistakes. Sometimes they're just people making mistakes. But when people allege this kind of crazy conspiracy theory, usually when you look at the evidence, there's no there.
Yeah. Well, hey, man. So you've convinced me. This so-called voter fraud problem and the Election Integrity Commission is probably a bunch of bull crap. I'll use the technical term. You know, nonsense. I don't know. You tell me. But my point is, still, the people who are going to be excluded, there probably are not too many hedge fund managers represented among this group. Too many billionaires, too many millionaires, too many people who own a lot of golf courses and big towers and hotels and buildings, right? I mean, who's getting hit here, I guess, is my question.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, the people that are likely to be purged from the voting rolls or have their polling places eliminated or be turned away because they don't have the right voter ID, they're unlikely to be Donald Trump's buddies or the benefactors of the Republican Party. They're more likely to be Democratic-leaning voters. They're more likely to be voters of color that have historically been excluded. They're more likely to be students because you have laws like in Texas where you could vote with a gun permit but not a student ID under their voter ID law. More likely to be lower income people that are struggling, that move a lot, that don't own a passport or know where their birth certificate is in a place like Kansas. So it's people that are more marginal, that have less money, that have less power. They're the ones that are going to be hit by these things, and that's what's so concerning about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and so these are folks who, you know, if successfully excluded, their lack of presence in the election could tip the election, huh?
Well, it absolutely could tip the election. What we saw in 2008 and in 2012 is that when more people vote, Democrats and progressives do better. And Republicans understand that. They understand that better than anyone. And when fewer
I think they understand it better than Democrats do.
They understand it better than Democrats. And when fewer people vote, like happened in 2010, 2014, 2016, it benefits the Republican Party. And that's why they're so intent on trying to suppress the vote, on trying to shrink the electorate, and trying to make the electorate whiter and more conservative as opposed to younger and more diverse. And I just think it's sad in this day and age that the parties are not arguing over ideas. They're arguing over who can even participate. You think we would have settled this a long time ago.
Yeah, and, Ari, based on your experiences, is the population, the general population, more or, say, less inclined to support something like, an increase in the minimum wage, fair scheduling laws, aggressive action on, environmental hazards like, say, what happened in Flint?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a difference between the voting population and the electorate? I mean, the voting population and the population.
That's a really good point. So there have been studies done. People don't realize a quarter of Americans aren't even registered to vote. 50 or 60 eligible Americans aren't even registered to vote, which I think is an absolute crisis. And surveys have shown that those voters, if they were registered, would support things like a higher minimum wage, a better public education, fair criminal justice laws, these kind of things. And I think that's one reason why Republicans don't want to make voter registration easy, because they believe that an expanded electorate will not only benefit Democratic candidates, but will lead to more progressive policies. So, you are someone that goes around your district and wants to register everyone and wants everyone to vote no matter what will happen, because you're not threatened by an increase in political participation. You think you can win these voters by making a good argument to them. But not every politician, I think, thinks that way, unfortunately. They're scared of what a larger and more diverse electorate might mean, and so they're trying to restrict voting rights because of that.
So, Ari, how naive do we need to be in order to believe that the Election Integrity Commission would actually improve the quality of an election?
Well, the Election Integrity Commission has nothing to do with election integrity.
Okay.
This is a commission that's predicated on a gigantic lie that millions of people voted illegally, and they're going to use this lie to try to put in place policies that suppress the vote in advance of the 2018 and the 2020 elections. And you just have to look at the members of the commission and the things they want to do. I mean, Chris Kobach told me he wants voter ID laws and proof of citizenship laws in every state. He told me he wants to see the Voting Rights Act and the National Voter Registration Act weekend. He's been one of the only people that's defended Trump's claim that millions of people voted illegally. So their agenda is clear here. What I think we need is we need a commission to study the fact that according to intelligence agencies, 21 states had their voter registration systems or their election systems hacked by the Russians.
Wow.
The first thing we need to study, that is a huge crisis that's only going to get worse. And we need to study the fact that the 2016 election was the first presidential election in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act and what that meant for voters and what policies like voter ID laws have on the electorate. That's what we need to be studying. We don't need to be studying imaginary voter fraud. There's no evidence that thousands, let alone millions of people, voted illegally in the last election. So we're focused on all the wrong problems. And my worry here is that we're going to get so sidetracked by these claims of illegal voting that we're going to ignore the real threats to election integrity in our current system.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you pointed out that story about the Russians doing illegal hacking in all these state election systems, because I've run into a number of people who think that the whole Russia debate is just sort of a distraction. But the truth is, there are implications for our democracy, are there not?
There are implications for our democracy, very serious implications for our democracy. And whether it was the Russians or somebody else,
whoever,
our system is so vulnerable. I just looked into this for a new story in The Nation. You have a situation where 14 states are using electronic voting machines with no paper trails,
wow,
including places like Philly, Atlanta, Houston, huge major metropolitan areas voting with no paper backups, meaning if there was a hack, we wouldn't even maybe know about it. No matter who hacked it, whether it was Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, anyone else, we wouldn't even know about it. Then you have a situation where in 42 states, the voting machines are at least 10 years old. They're going to break down at any moment. Then you have the fact that we already know in the last election that at least almost half of the states had some sort of targeting by hackers of their voter registration system. So I think regardless of whether you think, how serious you take the Russia story, and I take it very seriously, and I know you take it very seriously, but even if you don't take it seriously, our election system is incredibly vulnerable to this kind of cyber hacking going forward. And 2016 was just the first taste of what it might look like. I think my worry is that in 2018 and 2020, the people that want to do this are going to be more sophisticated, and we've done nothing to protect ourselves. Your Republican colleagues in the House just voted to defund the Election Assistance Commission, which is the only federal agency that helps states prevent hacking. And the cost of funding the Election Assistance Commission is $4 million, which is basically what it costs to send Donald Trump to Mar-a-Lago once. So it's not a lot of money, and it's crazy that we're doing this right now.
Well, it's crazy according to a certain line of logic, democracy. Of course, along another line of logic, it's sort of Machiavellian, but totally understandable, unfortunately. So, hey, let me ask you this, Ari. So the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights under the law, we just call them the Lawyers Committee around here. On Monday, they filed a lawsuit against the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity for its failure to operate in a transparent way under the Federal Advisory Committee Act. Do you have any thoughts on that, and what can you tell the listeners about it?
Well, this is pretty amazing. So what happened, as I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, that Kris Kobach and this Presidential Commission on Election Integrity asked for sweeping voter data from all 50 states. They said they wanted publicly available information, and they listed all of these things, like Social Security numbers and party affiliation and military history and criminal records that are not publicly available and, in fact, are quite sensitive, and the federal government has never stored in one place before. And states began rebelling against this. 48 states, including Kris Kobach's home state of Kansas.
Kansas even said no, huh?
They refused to provide all the data because things like Social Security numbers are not publicly available. So I don't know why Kobach himself said they were publicly available unless he just didn't know the law or was trying to trick states into providing this information. Then, after all of these states rebelled, both red and blue states, you begin to see a flood of lawsuits. So right now there have been six different lawsuits filed against Kobach and this commission for violating six different federal privacy and ethics laws, which is just unbelievable. I mean, it's bad enough if a commission on quote-unquote election integrity violates one law, but to violate six different laws just shows how sloppy this was. And just recently, Kobach was sanctioned by a federal court and actually had to pay a fine for what the federal court said was deceptive conduct and lack of candor in a lawsuit with the ACLU. So this is just...
Now, my mom might call that lying.
Yeah.
Lack of candor? I don't know. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when a federal court accuses you of deceptive conduct and lack of candor, those are pretty strong.
That's pretty tough.
If you take it out of legalese. So, I mean, this is a guy who has just absolutely no credibility. It's crazy that any state would give him any sort of voter data, would give the Trump administration, given their track record, any sort of voter data. I mean, we have a situation where the president won't release his tax returns, is hiding all sorts of dealings with Russia, but wants voter data from all 50 states. I mean, it's totally unbelievable, and it looks right now that it violates the law as well.
Right. So, hey, man, I just want to say thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us on We the Podcast. You know, we definitely believe that if we want to get in a fair, if we want a fair economy, we're going to have to get folks to be in office who are willing to vote for a fair economy. And we can't get them in office to vote for a fair economy if the electorate who wants a fairer economy can't even get to the ballot box, can't even vote. So this issue of the bread box and the ballot box, I mean, I think they're directly connected. Any thoughts on that?
No, I absolutely think that's true. I mean, I always tell people, why would someone want to suppress the vote? Like, just to do it? No, because they want to try to achieve some sort of policy outcome when they get in office. And it's usually a kind of outcome that favors the wealthy and favors the powerful to the exclusion of everyone else, which is why you'd want to restrict the electorate in the first place. So I think it's very serious a very serious problem, and it's very important, as you're doing, to draw connections. So voting rights is not just some abstract issue, but it connects to all of these larger issues that people care about, whether it's the economy or their health care or a fairer criminal justice system or all of these issues that you and others care about.
Ari, what's the name of your book you wrote recently?
Give Us the Ballot.
Give Us the Ballot can be found anywhere. So, hey, Ari Berman, Give Us the Ballot. Ari, you're the man, and thanks for appearing on We the Podcast.
Great to talk to you, Congressman. Thank you very much.
Voting matters. It matters so much that there are people who don't want you to vote. In fact, they stay up day and night trying to figure out how to stop Americans from getting access to the ballot. And everybody knows that it used to be that way back before the Civil Rights Movement. But what Ari Berman and so many others can tell you is that it's still going on this very minute at the highest levels of our government. That's what Trump's Election Commission is all about. It's about making people unable to exercise their rights to vote. Because they don't want people to be able to make choices about their own lives. They want to make choices for other people. And we've seen the results of these attempts to stop people from voting in the form of declining turnout. States are passing voter ID laws, anti-women laws, lowering the minimum wage, cutting environmental protections. And at the federal level, Republicans are trying to snatch your health care away in order to simply give rich people a bigger tax cut. That's not right, and it's not what working people want or need. There are many ways to fight back. You can take to the streets, or you can write a letter to the editor. You can organize in your neighborhood. You can write a song or a poem, or you can write a play, or you can start your own podcast. But there's only one way to reverse the damage for good, and that is voting for people who believe that everybody has a right to vote. Like Ari said, when the poor vote more, equality increases. So let's oppose efforts to take away people's right to vote, especially Trump's election commission. Because voting is the cornerstone of our democracy, and no one, especially the government, should take that right away. Hey, for We the Podcast, this is Keith Ellison, and I'll see you next time. Hey, do me a favor, head on over to the iTunes page and rate, review, and subscribe. This episode of We the Podcast was produced by Brett Morrow and Isaiah Kirsten Breen. See you next time on We the Podcast.